And good afternoon. You're listening to Ken Hudnall. This is the Ken Hudnall Show. Coming to you from our studios right here in exciting El Paso, Texas. Gateway to the Old West and the most haunted city in the country. Well, we're beginning another week. It's August 10th, 222nd day of the year. Leap year 223rd. 143 days remain to the end of the year. You know, the term the 10th of August is widely used by historians as a shorthand for the storming of the Tuileries Palace in the 10th of August, 1792. That was the effective end of the French monarchy until they got restored in 1814. You know, on this date in the year 654, Pope Eugene I elected to succeed Martinus I. In the year 955, the Battle of Lechfield, Otto I, Holy Roman Emperor, defeats the Magyars, ending 50 years of Magyar invasion of the West. 991, the Battle of Maldon, the English led by Bertinoth, Earl Dorman of Essex, are defeated by a band of inland raiding Vikings near Maldon, Essex. You know, had the Vikings pressed their advantage, the world might be completely different. In the year 1030, Battle of Azaz ends with a humiliating retreat of the Byzantine Emperor Romanus III, Argios, against the Mirdazid rulers of Aleppo. The retreat degenerates into a rout in which Romulus himself barely escapes capture. Year 1270, Yukuno Amlek takes imperial throne of Ethiopia, restoring the Solomonic dynasty to power after a 100-year Zagwe interregnum. 1316, Second Battle of Athenry takes place near Athenry during the Bruce campaign in Ireland. In 15, I get all kinds of attempts to contact me when I'm on the air. Okay, 1512, the naval battle of St. Matthew during the War of the League of the Cambrai. Sees a simultaneous destruction of the Breton ship La Cordelia and the English ship the Regent. I guess you'd call that a draw. 1519, Ferdinand Magellan's five ships set sail from Seville to circumnavigate the globe. The Basque second-in-command, Juan Sebastian Elcano, will complete the expedition after Magellan's death in the Philippines. 1557, Battle of St. Quentin, Spanish victory over the French in the Italian War of 1551 through 1559. 1585, the Treaty of Nonsuch, signed by Elizabeth I of England and the Dutch rebels. 1628, the Swedish warship Vasa sinks in the Stockholm Harbor after only about 20 minutes in their maiden voyage. If there was a warranty issued on that ship, they probably needed to claim on it. Okay, 1641, the Treaty of London between England and Scotland ends the Bishop Wars. 1675, the foundation stone of the Royal Greenwich Observatory in London is laid. 1680, the Pueblo Revolt begins in New Mexico against the Spanish. And in fact, the Spanish ran here to El Paso, positive that the Pueblo Indians were going to come down here. And in fact, one of the wealthiest gold mines in the New World that the Spanish monks were working is hidden somewhere around El Paso. And it's been found twice and lost both times. 1741, King Marthanda Varma of Travancore defeats the Dutch East India Company at the Battle of Kalachow, effectively bringing about the end of the Dutch colonial rule in India. 1755, under the orders of Charles Lawrence, the British Army begins to forcibly deport the Acadians from Nova Scotia to the 13 colonies. A lot of them went to Louisiana. 1776, the word of the United States Declaration of Independence reaches London. Did not make the king happy, let me tell you. 1792, storming of the Tuileries. Louis XVI of France is arrested and taken into custody as his Swiss guards are massacred by the Parisian mob. 1793, the Musée du Louvre is officially opened in Paris. That's the Louvre Museum, folks. 1809, Quito, now the capital of Ecuador, declares independence from Spain. The rebellion will be crushed on August 2nd, 1810. 1813, Instituto Nacional is founded by the Chilean patriot José Miguel Carrera. Chile is the oldest and most prestigious school. Its motto is Labor Omnia Vincit, means work conquers all things. 1821, Missouri is admitted to the U.S. as the 24th state. 1846, the Smithsonian Institution is chartered by the United States Congress after James Smithson, who never set foot in this country, donates $500,000. 1856, the last island hurricane strikes Louisiana, resulting in over 200 deaths. 1861, Battle of Wilson Creek, a mixed force of Confederate, Missouri State Guard, and Arkansas State troops defeat outnumbered attacking Union forces in the southwest part of the state. 1864, after Uruguay's governing Blanco Party refuses Brazil's demands, José Antonio Saravia announces the Brazilian military will begin reprisals. This started the Uruguayan War. 1897, German chemist Felix Hoffmann discovers an improved way to synthesize aspirin. Salicylic acid, which is aspirin. 1901, U.S. Steel recognition strike by the Amalgamated Association of Iron and Steel Workers begins. 1904, Russo-Japanese War. Battle of the Yellow Sea between the Russian and Japanese battleship fleets takes place. 1905, also in the Russo-Japanese War. Peace negotiations begin in Portsmouth, New Hampshire. 1913, the Second Balkan War. Delegates from Bulgaria, Romania, Serbia, Montenegro, and Greece signed the Treaty of Bucharest, which ends the war. 1920, during World War I, Ottoman Sultan Mehmed VI, the representative, signed a Treaty of Sevres that divides up the Ottoman Empire between the Allies. 1932, a 11-pound chondrite-type meteorite breaks into at least 7 pieces and lands near the town of Archie in Cass County, Missouri. 1936, Spanish Civil War. The Regional Defense Council of Aragon is dissolved by the Spanish Republic. 1944, the Battle of Guam comes to an end on this date. Also in 1944, the Battle of Narva ends with a combined German-Estonian force successfully defending Narva, Estonia from invading Soviet troops. 1948, Candid Camera makes its television debut after being on radio for a year as Candid Microphone. 1949, an amendment to the National Security Act of 1947 enhances the authority of the U.S. Secretary of Defense over the Army, the Navy, and the Air Force, and replaces the National Military Establishment with the Department of Defense. 1953, the First Indochina War. The French Union withdraws its forces from Operation Camargo against the Viet Minh in central Vietnam. The Viet Minh were the original Viet Cong. 1954, at Messina, New York, the groundbreaking ceremony for the St. Lawrence Seaway is held. 1961. Vietnam War. U.S. Army begins Operation Ranch Hand, spraying an estimated 20 million gallons of defoliant herbicide over rural areas of South Vietnam in an attempt to deprive the Viet Cong of food and vegetation cover. Quite a bit of that was what was referred to as Agent Orange, which had a lot of long-lasting effects. 1966, the Herndon Road Bridge collapses while being built, kills 9 workers in a deadliest construction accident in both Ottawa and Ontario. 1969, a day after murdering Sharon Tate and 4 others, members of Charles Manson's cult kill Lino and Rosemary LaBianca. 1971, Society for American Baseball Research is founded at Cooperstown, New York. 1977, in Yonkers, New York, 24-year-old postal employee David Berkowitz, also known as the Son of Sam, is arrested for a series of killings in a New York City area over a period of 1 year. There is evidence there was more than one Son of Sam, but once they had Berkowitz, they closed the case. 1978, 3 members of the Ulrich family killed in an accident. This leads to the Ford Pinto litigation. If I'm not mistaken, the car was rear-ended and blew up, which was considered detrimental to future sales. 1981, the murder of Adam Walsh. The head of John Walsh's son is found. This inspires the creator of television series America's Most Wanted, the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children. I saw him the other day. He is looking old, let me tell you. 1988, Japanese-American internment. Reagan signs the Civil Liberties Act of 88, providing $20,000 payments to Japanese-Americans who were either interned in or relocated by the U.S. during World War II. 1990, the Magellan Space Probe reaches Venus. 1993, 2 earthquakes affect New Zealand. A 7.0 quake in the South Island is followed 9 hours later by a 6.4 event in the North Island. 1995, Oklahoma City bombing. Timothy McVeigh and Terry Nichols are indicted for the bombing. Michael Fortier pleads guilty in a plea bargaining for his testimony. It's now come to light that there's a whole lot more to the story we were never told. 1997, 16 people are killed when Formosa Airlines Flight 7601 crashes near Vigan Airport in the Matsu Islands of Taiwan. 1998, His Royal Highness Prince Al Mutadi Bilala is proclaimed the Crown Prince of Brunei with a royal proclamation. 1999, Los Angeles Jewish Community Center shooting. 2001, the 2001 Angola train attack occurs, causing 252 deaths. 2003, the Okinawa Urban Monorail is open in Naha, Okinawa. 2009, 20 people are killed in Handlova, Trenčín region, in the deadliest mining disaster in Slovakia's history. 2012, the Marikana massacre begins near Rustenburg, South Africa, results in the death of 47 people. 2014, 40 people are killed when Sepahan Airlines Flight 5915 crashes at Tehran's Mehrabad Airport. And in 2019, 32 people are killed and 1 million are evacuated as Typhoon Lakima makes landfall in Zhejiang, China. Early, it caused flooding in the Philippines. Well, there's an unbelievable number of births and deaths on this date in history. Holidays. Argentine Air Force Day in Argentina. Christian feast days. Besos. Blaine in the Roman Catholic Church. Geriant of Domnonia. Lawrence of Rome, Nicola Saggio, Nuestro Senor del Buen Suceso de Peronique, patroness of Peronique in the Philippines. Declaration of Independence of Quito, which proclaimed independence from Spain August 10th, 1809. International Biodiesel Day, And in Indonesia, it's National Veterans Day. Now, let's see what else we've got. In 612 BC, the killing of Sinsarishkun, the king of the Assyrian Empire. The destruction of Nineveh. In the year 70, the second temple in Jerusalem was set on fire by Roman army under Titus during the capture of the city. 610 in Islam, the traditional date of the Layat al-Qadr, when Muhammad began to receive the Quran. 843, Treaty of Verdun. Brothers Lotharius I, Louis the German, and Charles the Bald divide France. 955, Battle of Eichsfeld. Otto I, King of the Germans, defeats the Hungarian. 1497, John Cabot tells King Henry VII about his trip to Asia. 1500, Portuguese sea captain Diego Diaz is the first European to sight Madagascar. 1512, we have the Battle of St. Mathieu, also called the Battle of Brest. An English fleet of 25 ships commanded by Sir Edward Howard and a Franco-Breton fleet of 22 ships commanded by René Clermont duke it out. 1557, Battle of St. Quentin in Picardy. Lamoral, Count of Egmont, and Philbert, Duke of Savoy in the Spanish Empire, beat the Duke of Montmorency in France. 1five, the Swedish warship Vasa that I spoke about that sank during its first 20 minutes of its maiden voyage. 30 people died in that sinking. 1659, Mughal Emperor Aurangzeb has his brother and competitor for the throne, Dara Sukal, executed on religious grounds. You don't believe the way I believe? You're gonna die. 1787, Wolfgang Amadeus Mozart completes his chamber piece, which roughly translated is a little serenade. 1792, there's a large-scale insurrection against the French monarchy that occurs in Paris. Also in 1792, papers stolen from the Tuileries Palace prove the Comte de Mirabeau had secret dealings with the court. That was hidden for a long time. Alrighty. See if there's anything else of any interest. 1862, Battle of the Noche River in Texas. 1869, Obie Brown patents the moving picture projector. And the next year, the first porn was produced. 1877, at the Big Hole River, Colonel John Gibbon murders Nez Perce Indians. 1889, Dan Rylands patented the screw cap, which made box wine possible. I think that's pretty much got it. I'm going to start a project today that you may or may not find interesting. I've been doing, you know, I write books, and I've been working on a project. I've always been fascinated by the Kennedy assassination. And in theory, all it is a guy up on the school book depository shot and killed the president. But that's not the entire story. No, by all means. Now, most people remember where they were at the time of Kennedy's assassination. I was at my grandmother's in Tennessee. And I still remember Walter Cronkite came on and talked about Kennedy being shot. Well, there's quite a bit more to the story. It turns out, while the major crime may have been the assassination of the president, there was a whole lot more at play than just the shooting of one man. And a lot of people that he had the right to expect loyalty from were involved. Now, I've been working on a series called The Assassination Files. And in The Assassination Files, I talk about how assassination has been used as a political device for quite a long time. In fact, you know, during World War II, of course, we didn't have a formal intelligence operation. We've got the CIA now and the DIA and a whole bunch of other IAs. But at that point in time, we didn't have a formal organization. In fact, going into World War II, Roosevelt authorized a close friend of his who had been a World War I military commander to create the OSS, the Office of Strategic Services. And their job was to figure out what the enemy was up to. And according to the story, at the end of the war, the head of the OSS folded up his tent and went home. The whole organization was disbanded until 1947, when what we know as the CIA began. Well, that's what is given out for public consumption, but that is not true. The OSS, which was highly successful in many respects, was fought tooth and nail by J. Edgar Hoover, who wanted the FBI to be the only intelligence organization in the country. In fact, any chance he got, he interfered with OSS operations. The only time I know of that he fully cooperated was in regard to the Warren Commission, which set out to prove what he wanted proven, which was Oswald was the lone nut gunman. Well, let's talk about what happened to the witnesses to the Kennedy assassination. Now, these are the ones we know about. There were 23 murders, most of which were never solved. There were 10 alleged suicides. 24 unexplained gunshots. 18 heart attacks. 4 mysterious unsolved disappearances. 15 accidents. 4 explosions. 5 died from cancer. 1 from burns, 1 had a collapsed lung, and 3 were mysteriously electrocuted. Now, there seemed to be a spike of these deaths at various times, which included the time period the Warren Commission was doing its investigation, and during the House Select Committee on Assassinations investigation. One of the suicides was the individual who was a military officer who had the job of taking photographs of the president's head wounds in the autopsy room. The photos that appeared in front of the Warren Commission, he later said, were not the ones he took. And before he could prove it, he was found dead. Supposedly, he committed suicide. Shot himself in the right side of the head, even though he was left-handed. Now, when you start looking at all these deaths, from an actuarial standpoint, 41% of the witnesses were killed after it was known they had relevant testimony, but before they had a chance to testify to anything. It was 100,000 trillion to one that all these deaths would take place. Now, I'm sure somebody's going, well, you know, some of them were heart attacks and some were cancer. Well, the church committee, which was assigned to investigate overreaching by the CIA, discovered and revealed that the CIA had developed a covert heart attack gun. And in regard to Fidel Castro, the CIA had also developed a cancer bioweapon. Now, the church committee in the 1970s, Frank Church, the head of it, was also photographed with the heart attack weapon that was developed by the CIA. This particular gun, and it looked like a standard .45 automatic, but it's electrically powered by a battery. And it fires an extremely small dart of ice, and inside that dart of ice is frozen shellfish toxin. Once the dart is fired, and it has such an ability to penetrate, it can penetrate clothing, and once it enters the target, the ice melts. The only thing that's left is a small red mark on the victim where it entered. And as I said, it's fired at a very high rate of speed and it will penetrate clothing. You might feel a small pinch, or you might feel nothing at all. And after the ice melts, the shellfish toxin is literally injected into the body. And any evidence that it was done literally melts away. The shellfish toxin goes on to cause a heart attack and the victim dies. And during an autopsy, this shellfish toxin is almost impossible to detect. Now, this was a weapon that was developed and used in the 1970s. So what has the CIA developed since then? Now, there's a lot of evidence also that the CIA had developed a cancer bioweapon. In fact, it was written about at great length by Judith Vary Baker. She wrote a book called Lee and Me. She, Lee Harvey Oswald, and David Ferry had been involved in the development of this cancer bioweapon in New Orleans, and it was going to be used to assassinate Fidel Castro. And there is evidence that this particular cancer bioweapon was used actually against Jack Ruby. He claimed that his new doctor had injected him with cancer cells. It was developed by Dr. Mary Sherman, and she was later murdered in her apartment. In fact, I read a book about her murder. It's called Dr. Mary's Monkey. It goes into quite a bit of information about this cancer bioweapon. Now, a substantially high number of witnesses died who'd been scheduled to give testimony before the House Select Committee on Assassinations. You know, so many people disbelieve the Warren Commission at the House eventually impaneled what they called the Select Committee on Assassinations. They were going to go behind the Warren Commission and investigate everything that had come to light. Now, among the people who died was a man named Johnny Rosselli. See, the CIA had joined forces with the mob. They wanted to take back Cuba. And it was a case of the enemy of my enemy is my friend. Now, Johnny Rosselli, who testified during congressional hearings, talked about some of the facts involved in the Castro murder plot. Now, that violated the Mafia Code. You know, the Mafia Code of Omerta. You don't talk about things. Well, on August 9, 1979, his decomposed body was found in a 55-gallon drum floating in the Miami, Florida Bay. According to several people, Rosselli confessed that he had been involved in the Kennedy assassination in Dallas. There's quite a number of folks who, in their various write-ups, talked about the fact that Rosselli apparently thought he'd be safe if he told everybody what he knew. Rosselli's own attorney said that Rosselli confessed to him he was involved in the Kennedy assassination. See, too many people were talking about the fact that there was not one shot to kill Kennedy. He had actually been caught in an ambush. Now, there's a lot of evidence that the CIA recruited people who used to own casinos in Cuba to help them topple Castro. And these people are high-ranking members of organized crime, such as Sam Giancana. Now, he was murdered in his own kitchen in Illinois just days before he was supposed to testify before a Senate committee. He had been assassinated. Giancana's daughter later claimed her father's running a scam, pocketing millions of dollars from CIA funding that had been given to him to assassinate Castro. Then there's George de Morenshiel, petroleum geologist who was born into a wealthy family in Russia, immigrated to the U.S. in the 30s. At the time of his immigration, he was suspected of being a German spy by the British. And he had a lot of ties and connections to both the oil industry and U.S. intelligence. And he became a friend and mentor to Lee Harvey Oswald in the summer of 1962. Helped Oswald get jobs. One of them was at a photographic and graphics company known as Jagger, Chills, and Stovall in the Dallas-Fort Worth area. This firm had a contract with the National Reconnaissance Organization to put place names on photos taken by the U-2 spy planes. Now, to work there, you had to have a high-level clearance. And Oswald, remember, defected to Russia. But he was still granted that clearance and given a job there. And there is evidence that de Morenshiel actually had close contact with George H.W. Bush, who later became president. He was also head of the CIA. Now, when you start digging into all this stuff and looking, you get an entirely different picture than the lone nut gunman. For example, Jack Ruby's first lawyer, name was Tom Howard. He'd been in Jack Ruby's apartment on November 24th, 1963, and he was known to have taken some documents. And he was going to write a book. Well, wouldn't you know it, he had a heart attack in March of 1965. Hank sued him in charge of Life Magazine stories on the Kennedy assassination. He had possession of the Zapruder film, which would have been bought and locked up by Life to keep it from being shown. He had a heart attack in December 1966. How about Joe Brown? He was actually one of the judges in the Jack Ruby trial. He was going to grant, according to the rumor, he was going to grant Ruby a new trial. He had a heart attack in 1966. Now, David Ferry was a very interesting character. He was a pilot that worked for the mob and also worked for the CIA. He was deeply involved in the anti-Castro Cuban movement. Also involved in the CIA biocancer weapon development and was a close friend of Lee Harvey Oswald. He also worked part-time for the Guy Bannister Detective Agency in New Orleans. Now, when Oswald was passing out his Fair Play for Cuba pamphlets, the address for the Fair Play for Cuba organization that was on the pamphlets was actually the address for Guy Bannister's detective agency. According to Bannister's secretary, Delphine Roberts, Ferry and Oswald were both frequent visitors to the Bannister office in 63. Ferry was subpoenaed by Jim Garrison, the district attorney, who had opened an investigation into the assassination of Kennedy in New Orleans. Right before Ferry was supposed to testify, he was found dead in his apartment. That death was ruled a suicide, but very few people believed it. How about, you know, right up until his death, Ferry claimed he didn't know Oswald. And yet there's numerous pictures that show the two of them together. They were both in the Civil Air Patrol. In fact, Ferry was Oswald's commander. David Ferry also was a sometimes private investigator. One of his clients was Carlos Marcello, the mob boss of the southeastern part of the U.S. Then there's Eladio Del Valle, a Cuban exile who worked in the anti-Castro movement, close friend of David Ferry, also known to work for Santo Traficante, the Florida crime boss. Garrison was trying to subpoena Del Valle to testify in relation to the Kennedy assassination. Del Valle was able to stay one step ahead of receiving that subpoena. And on the same day that Ferry was found dead, Del Valle was found dead. According to a police report, Del Valle was tortured, shot through the heart at point-blank range, had his skull split open with an axe. And there was an effort made by the police to declare it a suicide. Well, if it was, it was one of the most determined cases of suicide on record. How about Charles Nicoletti? He was a mobster and a hitman from Chicago. Had the nickname the Typewriter. He was suspected of at least 20 mob hits during his lifetime. And he was named as one of the gunmen that fired shots from the Deltex building by both Johnny Roselli and James Files, another alleged assassin. Nicoletti had been summoned to appear before the House Select Committee on Assassinations, but sitting in a car parking lot in North Lake, Illinois, somebody pumped 338 slugs into the back of his head. Coincidence, of course. How about David Sanchez Morales, an agent of the CIA involved in executive action programs? Now, that executive action was a series of programs that overthrew various governments around the world. It also was known to engage in assassinations. There was a movie called Executive Action that dealt with the assassination of President Kennedy. He was involved in the overthrow of the democratically elected president of Guatemala, Jacobo Arbenz Guzman, involved in a program called JM Wave and ZR Rifle that were CIA plots to assassinate Fidel Castro, was known to work with Johnny Roselli and David Atlee Phillips. He was suspected with being involved in the Kennedy assassination. And there are claims that a person that fits his description was seen with Oswald in New Orleans in various bars and nightclubs. Now, E. Howard Hunt, who was one of the plumbers, on his deathbed, named Morales as one of the agents within the CIA who had operational oversight over some of the aspects of the Kennedy assassination in Dallas. In May of 78, Morales made a trip to Washington, D.C. about an upcoming congressional investigation he's going to have to testify in. When he got back to his home in Arizona, a friend noticed he didn't look all that well. That night, he was rushed to the hospital. Next day, he was dead. Nobody knows what killed him, and his wife demanded there not be an autopsy. Since he died in the hospital, a friendly doctor just signed off on the death certificate. How about William Guy Bannister? He was a career FBI agent. Ended up as head of the Chicago FBI office. He retired in 1954. In 1955, he became the assistant superintendent of New Orleans Police Department. But that didn't last all that long. You see, he was suspended for pulling a gun out in a bar and threatening a bar employee. He wanted some more peanuts. Then he opened what looked like a private investigative agency in New Orleans, but according to Jack Martin, the man who handled most of the private investigative work for the agency, it didn't do much detective work. Bannister's detective agency was actually a front organization involved in the Cuban anti-Castro movement. Bannister was best known for monitoring and keeping files of communists on college campuses, as well as being deeply involved with Cuban exiles attempting to overthrow the Cuban government. Oswald's Fair Play for Cuba committee, that he was out on the street passing out pamphlets for, had the agency address of 544 Camp Street stamped on it. According to the Bannister secretary, Delphine Roberts, the flyers Oswald was passing out, was some sort of thing that Bannister had Oswald set up. And according to Delphine Roberts, both David Ferry and Lee Harvey Oswald worked at the agency from time to time. And most of the checks that came into the Bannister Detective Agency came from the Remington Rand Corporation. Now, that's been known as, this was uncovered by the House Select Committee on Assassinations as a major CIA front operation. Bannister died of, ready for this, coronary thrombosis, June 6, 1964. That is another result of this shellfish toxin. Now then there's Rolando Masfera, newspaper publisher born in Cuba. When Castro came to power, he fled to Miami with rumors of having about $10 million in his pocket. He got involved with attempted assassinations and coups in Cuba and had links to both Florida crime boss Traficante and Alpha 66, which was the organization behind the Bay of Pigs. According to William C. Bishop, Hoffa gave Masfera $50,000 out of retainer and expense money to set up the Kennedy assassination. On October 31st, 1975, after being subpoenaed to testify before the House Select Committee on Assassinations, he was found sitting in his car in Miami, Florida, dead. Now, if you're wondering what killed him, his car blew up. They discovered dynamite had been put under the hood. Of course, Jimmy Hoffa was the president of the Teamsters Union and a man Bobby Kennedy put behind bars. He also vanished. Nobody to this day knows what happened to him. How about William Colby? Became director of the Central Intelligence Agency when Nixon appointed him to that directorship. In 1995, both houses of Congress set up hearings on the activities of the CIA. Now, Colby was known for trying to clean up the CIA and gave a lot of national security covert action secrets to various people in government, and they became public. Because of testimony he gave to Congress, former CIA Director Richard Helms was indicted for perjury. Well, one member of the Warren Commission, every member of it except the two that were murdered, got rewarded for reaching the decision that Lyndon Johnson wanted. One of them was Gerald Ford. He became president. One of the first things he did was fire Colby as CIA director. After he retired, Colby wrote a book called Honorable Men. After the book was published, he was forced to pay an out-of-court settlement for making unauthorized disclosures in the book. Well, as if that's not enough, one night, Colby decided to go on a nighttime canoe trip from his home, and according to the story, fell overboard and drowned. He had called his wife the night of his supposed canoe ride, told her he was tired, going to fix him dinner and go to bed. That night, his wife was in Houston, Texas, and he was home alone. According to the official story, instead of going to bed, he decided to get out his canoe and go for a ride. He fell out of the canoe and drowned. So the sequel to his book, Honorable Men, died with him. Now, a lot of friends of Jack Ruby also bit the big one. A man named Bill Chester. He told several individuals that Jack Ruby and Lee Harvey Oswald were good friends. Now, they were going to have him in to testify before the Warren Commission. But he died of a mysterious heart attack in March of 1964. How about Leonard Pullen, a Navy employee who was helping put together a film on the last 2 days of John Kennedy's life? He had a one-car accident in 1967. There have been several one-car accidents of people involved in this little fiasco. How about Philip Garazzi? He placed Lee Harvey Oswald and Clay Shaw together in a conversation during the Garrison investigations. In March 1968, right before he could be subpoenaed by Jim Garrison, he electrocuted himself and died. His death was immediately ruled an accident. No investigation, no autopsy. Thomas Davis. He had been a gun runner in front of Jack Ruby. Jack Ruby also had been running guns into various places for the mob and for the CIA. He also electrocuted himself and died in September 1973. Well, this is one of the most next one's one of the most mysterious deaths. Dorothy Kilgallen. A reporter. If you ever saw What's My Line, she was a sharp lady. She was a famous journalist and reporter, one of the very few reporters to interview Jack Ruby after he shot Oswald, but before he died. Now, how she managed to work it out is anybody's guess, but the police allowed her to interview Ruby by herself. When she got back to New York, she told several people that she's going to break the Kennedy assassination wide open. And she had a file that anybody with any interest would have given a fortune to read. On November 8th, 1965, she is found dead in her apartment. Sitting up in bed, in full makeup, Official ruling was she died of a drug overdose. Now, interesting thing. She never, ever went to bed wearing makeup. No matter how late it was, she'd remove all her makeup before she got in bed. The file was missing as well. How about Paul Halliwell, a CIA agent and a lawyer? Deeply involved in financing covert operations regarding Cuba. He was one of President Kennedy's contact people at the CIA, liaison, so to speak. He died of a collapsed lung. Reason for the collapse? Nobody knows. Ralph Paul, a close friend and business partner of Jack Ruby. It was common knowledge if Ruby knew something, so did Paul. Mysterious heart attack. How about James Cadogan, an FBI document examiner involved in the examination of Lee Harvey Oswald's documents? He died from a fall in his own home in 1977. No autopsy, but the death was immediately ruled accidental. Karen Kupichinet, TV actress. She was overheard by a number of people talking about JFK being assassinated before he was assassinated. Well, one of the investigators for the Warren Commission found out about it, was trying to track her down. She is found dead November 28, 1963 in her apartment. The death was ruled a drug overdose. No autopsy was done. That was a shoot from the hip diagnosis by a police officer. The case remains unsolved. How about Hank Killam? The husband of one of the strippers that worked for Jack Ruby. Her name was Wanda Joyce. He worked as a painter with John Carter boarder at the boarding house at 1026 North Beckley Avenue when Oswald lived there. See, Oswald was separated from his wife at the time. Killam had known of the Ruby-Oswald connection. Right after the assassination, Killam left Dallas and went to Pensacola, Florida. Then he moved to Tampa and then back to Pensacola. He told his brother, Earl, "I'm a dead man. I've run as far as I'm going to run." Well, he was found dead March 17, 1964. His throat had been cut. Nobody knows who did it, why they did it. And case still remains open. How about John Garrett Underhill Jr., military intelligence officer, worked closely with the CIA. He had heard people talking inside the CIA that a small group of CIA agents had Oswald up as the patsy, and they, in fact, murdered Kennedy. Told his friends it had something to do with the Cubans. He also told his friends he'd feel for his life because they know I know. On May 8, 1964, he was found dead with a gunshot wound to the head. Immediately was declared a suicide. Well, he was shot behind the left ear, even though he was right-handed. No investigation, no autopsy. We know it's suicide. Hugh Ward, private investigator, worked for Guy Bannister. He knew a great deal about what went on in the Bannister office. He had to go to Mexico. Nobody knows why, but he just said he had to go. The plane crashed and he died. Nobody knows why the plane crashed. How about Donald Kaler? FBI fingerprint chemist who likely worked on the Oswald fingerprint evidence. In October 1977, he had a heart attack and died. Interestingly enough, that same month, his boss also had a heart attack and died. J.M. English, head of the FBI Forensic Sciences Laboratory. They also worked on the Oswald forensic evidence. October 1977, he had a heart attack and died. That was a bad month for heart attacks. How about Karen Little Lynn Carlin, a dancer who worked for Jack Ruby? Last person talked to him before he shot Oswald. She was a featured stripper at Jack Ruby's club. In fact, Ruby went downtown and wired her $25 before he walked into the basement of the Dallas Police Department and murdered Oswald. Lynn was interviewed by FBI agents. When they interviewed her, she was in a state of shock and highly agitated. In fact, the FBI agents described her as being at the point of hysteria and highly reluctant to say anything. After some prompting, she said that Lee Harvey Oswald, along with Jack Ruby and some other folks, were involved in a plot to kill Kennedy, and if she said anything about it, she'd be killed herself. Well, she was never able to say much after that because she vanished. Sometime after the assassination, the researcher finally located her, and she was convinced to come to a meeting. On the date of the meeting, he got a telephone call from an unidentified female who stated that she couldn't get to the meeting because a car broke down. What actually happened was, while en route to the meeting, she was shot in the head and killed. The only thing that kept the police from declaring it was a suicide was there was no gun in the car. How about Captain Frank Martin, a Dallas police officer? He witnessed Jack Ruby shooting Oswald. He told the Warren Commission, "There's a lot to be said, but it's probably better if I don't say it." Well, he never testified again because he suddenly died of cancer. Well, how about Marilyn Delilah Wally? Another Ruby dancer who knew the friendship and relationship of Oswald and Ruby. She died of a gunshot wound, supposedly shot by her husband, though he denied it. Lieutenant William Bruce Pitzer took the autopsy photos of John Kennedy. David Dennis, a fellow naval officer of Pitzer's, stated he saw the photographs, and they're not what's in the National Archives. And we now know that many of those photos were altered. Pitzer died of a gunshot wound that was immediately declared a suicide. Lieutenant Colonel Dan Marvin claims he was asked in 1965 by the CIA to conduct an operation that would involve an assassination. At first, Marvin said he'd do it, and then he found out he was supposed to shoot an American officer by the name of Lieutenant William Pitzer. Well, he said he refused to go through with it, but it appears somebody else did it. A book was written about this. It's called Without a Smoking Gun. Came out in 2004 by a man named Kurt Heiner. Well, we've come to the end of tonight's show. We'll be back tomorrow and we'll talk more about mysterious assassinations and all kinds of strange things. Until then, this is Ken Hudnall for the Ken Hudnall Show saying have a truly great evening.